You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our very special Ladies' Night installment of TPC continues this Saturday evening, August the 15th. How was Kim during that first hour? Well, let me tell you, the rest of the ladies coming on tonight are every bit as impressive, including our good friend, Dissident Mama, a truth warrior, a Jesus follower, a wife, a boy mom, and a lifelong learner. She is a practitioner of apologetics for Orthodox Christianity, the Southern tradition, homeschooling, and freedom, a recovering feminist, socialist, atheist, graduate of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and retired mainstream journalist turned domesticated belle and rabble-raising rhetorician. In her day-to-day life, she's known as Rebecca to most folks, Mom to her boys, Baby to her husband, Becky to her parents, Becknut to her nieces and nephews, and by her patron saint name to her parish. But here and at her blog, dissidentmama.net, she is the dissident mama, Rebecca, adept at triggering leftists, and she's going to bang as loudly as she can. Rebecca, how are you tonight?
I'm all right. I think I need to shorten my bio.
No. I think one word less and it wouldn't have held up. I think that was perfect.
Well, Rebecca, this is Keith. You're stepping in out of the on-deck circle into the batter's box, and you've got
yes.
a person. The leadoff batter is on first base, so bring them home.
All right.
Hey, she'll hit a grand slam. If you've ever read one of her articles, and we love to feature them and talk about them on this show, and, of course, she was with us back last April during Confederate History Month, her second appearance on the show. Always great to have you, Rebecca. Always good to talk to you. So let's continue the conversation we were having in the last hour. You too, a mother, what should our families be doing right now to better prepare ourselves for the great uncertainty in the days ahead?
Well, the first thing I'm trying to do more than ever is to focus on doing things together, of course. I mean, it can be gardening, it can be reading together, but we're specifically trying to read the Bible together more as a family. We were always Bible readers, but we're trying to do it so where we can have more discussions. I think, you know, those stories obviously have relevance for us, and it's a good way to help children, no matter their age, not be so fearful about the future. And it's just a great way to have this family bonding experience. Another thing we're doing is, I'm a homeschool mom, but my husband and I these days are thinking that going to the gun range as a family is probably way more important than, you know, studying Latin these days. So we're doing that a lot more. We're trying to get more physically fit. We're having our boys lift weights. They're not getting super duper bulky, but we're thinking that just physical strength can feed into spiritual and mental strength as well. So we're doing those things. I had a garden this year. I mean, I'm really good at growing cucumbers, and that's about it. So I'm not sure I'm there yet with that kind of preparedness. But
you won't disappoint James if you can't grow vegetables.
You know, I never did eat vegetables, but I did like to grow them. And you know what I really liked to plant, Rebecca, was the tomato plant or the pepper plant, because you could buy those from the store fully sprouted, and you could just put them in the dirt, and you were a great farmer. I never did like to plant anything from a seed.
Yeah.
But I could plant a plant that was already in bloom.
Well, James is not going to be requiring a lot of vegetable gardening, but he would like to know how to build a still.
Right.
That's the second time you've
really
said that.
Why not? So, yeah, I guess it depends on, you know, what you're trying to do, what level of preparedness you want to do, what you think is more important. Is it being prepared for the next world to come? Is it for tomorrow? Is it for a year from now? And it depends on the age of your kids, too, I think. I have three kids, a 13-year-old, and twins that are almost 12. So we're probably doing vastly different things than, you know, maybe kids, parents of toddlers are doing, that kind of thing. But we're also having our children take Russian lessons. They've been doing those since the fall. We want to have a backup plan or many backup plans that if we have to flee, we can, you know, be well-versed in foreign languages. And Russia to us seems like a place that if we had to flee, if they'll let us in, we may want to go. So, you know, that's a whole
They've got a lot of land. It's called Siberia.
I tell you what, I might rather live in Siberia than what I'm seeing America transition into. Yeah. But this is interesting because we are having ladies tonight on the program that in some cases are in different stages of life and with children of different ages. Now, my wife and I are on the very unique every 5 years plan. We have a 10-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son, and then one on the way. So that's a unique way of doing it, perhaps. But what you were touching on, Rebecca, was very interesting. Activities. Let's talk a little bit more about that before the first break, and then I want to talk about in the next segment about some of your most recent articles, which everybody should be reading. But activities that will help us bond closer together during these times of unrest. I mean, you mentioned going to the gun range. What are some other ones that you're doing or that we should be doing?
It's weird for me to think about that question because, you know, we're home a lot together anyway, even before COVID. So we've been doing we get a lot of things wrong, but being together has not been one of the things we've gotten wrong. But, for example, my husband has been wanting to play D&D with the boys forever and ever. He made that happen. My husband and I used to, you know, play guitar a little bit. We've busted those out a few times, and my kids take piano, so we've, you know, tried to jam together. You know, so they seem like silly things, but they're really not. You know, we've had some really good times doing things that we were never able to do because we told ourselves we were never able to do it. So one of the blessings of this insanity is we have had to slow down and think about doing things kind of out of the box, you know, because there are no baseball games to go to anymore. There are no piano lessons. They're on Zoom now. So we actually do have a lot of time, and we try to fill it with productive, fun, interesting things.
Rebecca, this is Keith. Let me throw something in. I'm the father of three boys.
Okay.
They're all grown now, all married, all gainfully employed. Now, I spent a lot of time taking my boys to various sports practices, you know, soccer, mm-hmm. baseball, basketball, you name it, you know, things like that. But I can tell you, with the third child, I finally got it right. I think the most important thing I did for any of them was this boy I spoiled. I even let him do hockey, where I'd have to get up at 6 o'clock.
Which isn't a big sport in Tennessee.
Right, but here's what happened. Yeah, I'm still helicoptering, as he said. But what I did was he fell in love with the Teenage Ninja Turtles and wanted to do ninjutsu. And I finally found a ninjutsu teacher. And teaching your boys a martial art where they can defend themselves not only against an unarmed but also an armed opponent, which is what ninjutsu does, I think that's the most valuable thing that I could have spent with all of my kids.
Well, it's certainly one of them. But the music is coming up. We are going to talk with Rebecca about some of her most recent articles, which, by the way, folks, if you're not reading them, if you're not reading all of them, please do it at dissidentmama.net. There at dissidentmama.net. She doesn't worship sacred cows. She smashes them with a bang, not a whimper. DissidentMama.net. We'll be right back.
Slaughters them.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused border agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. Defendapatriot.com.
Dad, can you make him stop?
Honey, he needs to practice.
He's been at it an hour.
Well, just trying to be patient.
Dad, it sounds like a cat calling for help or something.
Worse, a basement full of cats.
Yeah.
You know, hon, it is a little hard on the ears.
Not you, too.
Well, maybe we can all play a game. Andrew, do you want to play a board game? How about we watch a video? Hide and seek? Oh, I don't know. I give up.
Maybe we could all just sneak out of the house.
Honey, he's 9 years old. We can't leave him home alone.
And
we can make him practice with a sock.
Well, I guess we'll have to get some ice cream.
Did I hear someone say ice cream?
Family, isn't it about time?
Oh, I see the practice hasn't hurt your ears.
Well, I'm a serious musician.
Funny that you never seem to get better on that thing.
Works every time.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Hey, where'd all these cats come from?
I reinstated a policy first put in place by President Ronald Reagan, the Mexico City policy. I strongly supported the House of Representatives' pain-capable bill, which would end painful late-term abortions nationwide. And I call upon the Senate to pass this important law and send it to my desk for signing. We are protecting the sanctity of life and the family as the foundation of our society. And most importantly of all, it is the gift of life itself. That is why we march. That is why we pray. And that is why we declare that America's future will be filled with goodness, peace, joy, dignity, and life for every child of God.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have one more segment with Rebecca as we continue this showcase of five incredible women on this very special Ladies' Night installment of TPC. And I am at her website right now, dissidentmama.net. There's not a week that goes by, or at least not a week that has gone by in the last year or so that I am not there. But there was one article, Rebecca, that you posted recently, When Men Were Giants, that really resonated with me. And it's an article about the legacy of Sam Houston. And I'd like to talk about that. But more importantly, I think I want to talk about the need to instill upon our children the legacy and the history of their heroes. And I see here a picture of one of your sons with a bust of Sam Houston. How important is it to you to put it into your children's minds that these are the men that we need to look up to? These are the men you need to emulate.
How do you instill a sense of racial solidarity and respect for our origins?
Well, I think it's like instilling faith into your children. I mean, it's constant work, and you can't just kind of gloss over it or expect somebody else is going to teach it to them. I mean, I'm learning about my ancestry all the time. It's a deep well, just as Christianity is. It's like every time you read the Bible, you see it in a new way. God speaks to you in a different way. I mean, I see that as the story of humanity, too. You know, we are God's children, and knowing about our ancestors is just fascinating to me. And my oldest son is named Houston for a variety of reasons. We thought for a while that the Houston side of my husband's family were actually related to him. Turns out, in that deep well, they were not. But we still claim him because we love Sam Houston. But my husband's from outside of Houston, Texas, and it is a surname on my mother-in-law's side of the family. And we just think he's an awesome guy. He's such a paradox. He's such a square hole you know, square hole, a round hole in the square peg of his time. And I always feel like I'm that in my own time. And he's just, you can't typecast the guy. He was a free thinker, and people say he was a simpleton, but I think that, you know, his words stated simply the truth of the time, and he wasn't a secessionist, but he wasn't really a unionist either. I just find it completely fascinating. So teaching that to my children, just that tiny little piece, you know, I think is so important. It's a rite of passage, and if you don't teach it when they're young, they're not going to care about it when they're older.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's one of the things that I think that was so gripping when I read your article, When Men Were Giants, at DissidentMama.net, about Sam Houston. And, of course, I knew some of these things, but to see you put it so succinctly, I mean, he was such a nuanced guy and a hero in many ways, but also conflicted. And but it was just a great article, and it's something that I think everybody should read. That's why I wanted to bring it to the attention of the audience tonight.
Right, and like many of the Texas Revolution heroes, he was a Tennessean, like Davy Crockett, Sam Houston, so many of them.
Yeah, and I think just rites of passage are important, especially studying strong men, two little boys, you know. My husband took the kids, it was only for boys, to this thing called Lead with Character a few years ago. I don't know if it still exists, but long story short, it is going to different Civil War battlefields and talking about the honor of the people who fought there. It's, it has, you know, it's not totally pro-Southern, but, you know, talks about some Union heroes. Not every Yankee was a horrible guy. But generally speaking, it's from a Southern perspective. And to go to these places and think about what men went through as sons and, you know, husbands and fathers, it really had an impression on my children. And this was a few years ago when they were obviously much smaller than they are now. And we would like to continue with that. Like, I've never been to Chancellorsville, and it's just a stone's throw from where I live. I want to go there soon. You know, I want to start.
We can take you to Fort Pillow.
Fort Pillow. We want Fort Pillow. We want Chancellorsville. But yeah. In any event, When Men Were Giants is the article at DissidentMama.net. And, there, you know, speaking of giants, I'm sure there was a play on the fact that there is a 67-foot monument to Sam Houston in Texas. I mean, we're talking about some of the statues that have come down in recent months. 67-foot monument to Sam Houston, and you can see a picture of that there. But there's one more article, Rebecca, that I was really taken by at your website, Damn the Race Pimps, and it's a... It's an article that talks about Stone Mountain, and I was just seeing today a headline, Stone Mountain in Georgia closes ahead of white supremacist rally. And it's really a daily reminder that you are a white supremacist in modern parlance and the opinion of the media if you don't hate yourself and refuse to spit on the grave of your ancestors. Well, there was another article, too, white nationalists and counter-protesters clash in Kalamazoo. To be honest, I don't know what's going on at Stone Mountain today or in Kalamazoo. I don't know the groups involved. I don't know anything about it. But what I do know is that you are these things. You are a racist. You are a white supremacist. You are a white nationalist. If you don't hate yourself and hate your ancestors,
you have any sense of racial solidarity with
you
your
show
own
up
race
at Stone Mountain and you're not for the sandblasting of the monument, you are a white nationalist. You wrote about Stone Mountain, Rebecca. Your thoughts?
Yeah, because we just went there. I guess it was two Memorial Days ago. We went there. You know, that's what I've been trying to cross all these things off my bucket list, you know, over the years. And thank God I did. I didn't get to as many as I had hoped, but we got to a lot. And I'm telling you, nobody cared that there were three Confederates up on that rock. Not a soul cared. Everybody was having fun and drinking their slushies and doing their thing, riding the gondola to the top. And, you know, nobody cared. Everybody was having just a good old time. And the people who cared about that were just, we were just quietly respecting it and going into the museum, and we're the only people in there because nobody else is in the museum. They're all, like, drinking their slushies and riding the gondola. It was fine. Everybody was getting along. You know what I mean? And this was just a couple years ago. We know we had angst, yada, yada. But they've just made a mountain out of a molehill, figuratively, literally, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and y'all know it is. Y'all talk about this all the time, but it's just truly bad for everybody, because my main picture was a picture of a black family getting their family photo done with Stone Mountain as the backdrop. And I took a picture of it at the time. My husband's thinking I'm crazy. What are you doing? I said, that's very interesting that this is what they're, of all the places in greater Atlanta, they're going to come here and get their picture taken in front of three Confederates, because to them it was home. They're like, we love Stone Mountain. They're probably native Georgians. I didn't go up and talk to them. I wish I had now, but that's just what people did. And now people want to dynamite it and hang a tarp over it or whatever the heck they want to do. And it's just really sad. It's just really sad and stupid.
The thing we need to understand, Rebecca, is that, you know, as Southern white men, James and I get along famously with black people. Most white Southerners and black Southerners get along. There is a concerted...
On an individual basis, yeah, right. It's a different game. It's a different play.
Well, what is happening is that certain groups in our society, which I will not name in deference to James tonight, want to pick the scab off of every racial incident or potential racial incident, and that's the cause of the current state of affairs. Let me leave you with one thing.
Well, the point is, if you live in a majority minority, I guess they're the
majority. Minority, yeah.
They're a minority, but they're still the majority. But if you live in a city like that, you come into an account with them every day, and you get along. So, I mean, where's the animus? I mean obviously, there's a hand in play here, and the media plays a big role. Yeah.
A third party is involved.
Folks, the music's playing, so I will direct you one more time to DissidentMama.net. Rebecca, thank you so much for being on with us tonight. It's always good to talk and collaborate with you.
Thanks y'all so much.
Talk to you again soon.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A record-breaking heat wave is crippling most of the West. National Weather Service meteorologist Josh Weiss has details.
Maybe Wednesday the 19th, but really by Thursday and Friday of next week, some of that heat will start to abate pretty much everywhere but the far desert Southwest.
Rolling power outages were ordered Friday night in California. Cooling centers have been set up in many cities to help residents get out of the heat, but they're more restrictive due to the pandemic. KNX reporter Margaret Carrero.
In light of the coronavirus pandemic, safety measures will be in place, such as extensive cleaning of the centers and physical distancing.
They're designated seats, so the seats are spaced apart with the social distancing practices.
Kevin McGowan, director of LA County's Office of Emergency Management, says face masks will be required and people will be asked to self-assess for symptoms.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm John Hunt. Normally, you hear me on USA Radio News telling you stories about other people in the news. Well, now I've written a book about the amazing blessings of my life and how, through miracles, I'm still alive. I'm a 40-year radio host who thought he'd reached the height of his career until tragedy struck. After a severe bout with the flu, I died twice, was revived, and spent 6 days in a coma and started the journey toward a full heart transplant. The book is called My Rock and Roll Heart Transplant Journey and is available at Amazon.com in paperback and Kindle form. The story takes you through how I got the heart disease, the people that helped me along the way, some crazy stories, and the real life story of the miracles of science as I received the perfect heart match from my donor. I'm now in training for the 2020 Transplant Games in New Jersey. Grab your copy of My Rock and Roll Heart Transplant Journey today at Amazon.com. Thanks, and may your life be filled with all the love and miracles that mine has.
President Trump hasn't changed his mind about funding the Postal Service. USA Radio's Kenneth Burns has details.
President Trump is doubling down on his threat to withhold funding from the Postal Service. It comes as Thomas Marshall, General Counsel and Executive Vice President of the USPS, warned 40 states that state deadlines to request, return, and count ballots may clash with the realities of mail delivery. The president's threat is now tied with his coronavirus relief package.
Would you be willing to accept the $25 billion for the Postal Service, including the $3.5 billion to
General Vandenberg? Sure, they give us what we want.
And it's not what I want, it's what the American people want.
Former President Obama has accused his successor of trying to suppress the vote.
What we've never seen before is a president say, I'm going to try to actively kneecap the Postal Service to encourage voting, and I will be explicit about the reason I'm doing it.
For USA Radio News, I'm Kenneth Burns.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Oh, yeah, oh, wanna be by my side. Oh, yeah, oh, now it's finally time.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, the greenest state in the land of the free. Raised in the woods so he knew every tree, and killed him a bar when he was only three. Davy, Davy Crockett, the king of the wild frontier. He fought single-handed through the Indian War, till the Creeks was whipped and peace was in store. And while he was handling this risky chore, he made himself a legend forevermore. Davy, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
Now, Keith, as we continue ladies' night this evening, we got to get to our next guest. But very, very quickly, you were wanting to mention to Rebecca, our previous guest in the last segment, Davy Crockett. Why is that?
Well, she was talking about Sam Houston and the Texas Revolution and what a hero he was. And, of course, Sam Houston was a Tennessean, so was Davy Crockett. So they were both key figures. And I remember.
And so was Nathan Bedford Forrest, and so was Andrew Jackson, and so was Jack Daniels.
But they didn't fight in the Mexican War.
Well, Jack Daniels did.
Yeah. But here's what I was going to tell her, something that I learned in school when I was a child, which is Davy Crockett's life motto. And Davy Crockett's life motto was, I leave these words for others when I'm dead. Be always sure you're right, then go ahead. In other words, figure out what is right, then do it. Don't worry about the political fallout or the consequences of what you do. Just do what is right, and you can sleep well at night.
Well, we've got five women who would adhere to that motto, and we continue tonight with Megan Elise. Megan, are you there? And she is. So, Megan, well, welcome to the program. I'm glad to have you. This is another equally impressive family that we have met over the course of our journey. And Megan is a young mother with a growing family. And we recently spent time with her just not longer than a couple of weeks ago. But, Megan, it is great to have you tonight. Let's talk about what a strong marriage looks like. What does it value? Take it away.
Well, first off, I want to thank you for having me on the show tonight, inviting me. I'm very humbled, especially considering I'm pretty certain I'm the youngest one on the show tonight, and all these ladies have experienced so much just real stuff to offer that they've lived through. And I wanted to talk about what a like strong marriage really looks like, mostly because I've just been delving into that and really had the help. I have to give credit to our pastor and his wife and our church family of having that picture more clearly painted to me and my husband, Marshall, as we worked through some really rough patches in our marriage. It may be hard to tell from the outside, but the last couple months have been some of the hardest times for us ever. And so it's been like, okay, wow, I'll talk about this right now. But it's really a good time, too, because we've had to take a fresh look at it and why it all really matters and what the big picture is. So, yeah, I have to give thanks to them. But I think it's bigger. It comes down to just Christianity and what the basis of that is. Like Romans 8:28-31 reminds us how all works together for good for those who love God. And it says that if God be for us, then who can be against us? So everything really has to start from there, and not just little self-help books and like tidbits on how to improve your marriage. And it's not just so focused on that. You both have to have the right basis, the foundation It's like the pyramid, the triangle. If you're both working towards the Lord, you become closer together at the top there. But if you're just at each other or trying to fix each other, then you really, it's like an opposite magnet. You just like keep going backwards and not making progress. So that's been us lately. We've been, I'm so thankful for our community and helping us pull together and remind us what it's all really about. Because it's in these kind of times, we have to really get our act together and see that the world needs power couples, not just couples that are making it through, that are barely hanging together, but they really need, God needs us to be power couples to spearhead the cause for him.
Well, let's talk about what you call power couples. I mean, and of course, Keith was married until his wife's untimely passing.
30 years plus married.
30 years plus. I mean, I am now in my, what year is this? 14th year of
He's
marriage.
He's in the middle of it. He's
Look, anybody who says that from the time you say I do, it's going to be smooth sailing with no bumps for the rest of your life, I mean, obviously is lying to you. And so let's talk about the importance, Megan, of using biblical gender roles to become what you call a power couple.
Right, right. I want to add to that last little bit really quick that I was fixing to say that as well. The strong marriage does not mean it's going to look perfect all the time. The strong part of it is that when it's not going perfect, you don't give up, you persevere. That's the strength of it, for sure. So the biblical roles, if we want to have God on our side and really have his power in this mission and have him propel us forward, we really have to be playing by his rules and following his ordinance, and that would be the biblical gender roles. And that's just, Kim said it earlier, Rebecca said it as well, that it's just the natural application and how things run most smoothly. And to me, like one of the best definitions of a power couple is that couple that can be selfless. They each individually have to be selfless first and give up what's easiest, most comfortable, even sometimes what seems safest, and do what is right for their roles first and foremost. And God will bless that, and it'll bring him glory. That's his whole mission and point. All this. He'll have his glory in the end. So if we really want to help him as best possible, we have to play by the rules. And to be a power couple, you have to follow the proper gender roles, or you're just going to be fighting against each other all the time. You can't really propel forward strongly and be that good example to your children as well, because that really, really plays into it. You don't want, I think about it all the time. I want our children to see a great example from us and one that they want to step into the shoes of, because all this is for naught if we have many children and they don't take up the torch. We don't want them to be like, oh my goodness, it looks miserable what mom and dad do. We want them to look at it and be like, wow, that's an honor. I want to take up that and push forward. So that's another reason why it's super important for us to have those traditional biblical gender roles, because it's most harmonious that way and beautiful that way.
Megan, this is Keith. Let me just tell you, one thing that I took a great deal of guidance and comfort from were the marital vows that we said at our marriage. And hopefully you didn't have, you know, these made up marital vows, like I promise to not complain when my husband goes to Ole Miss football games or something. I've heard stuff like that. But the traditional vows are to have and to hold from this day forward, for richer, for poor, in sickness and in health, for better, for worse, and from this day forward, forsaking all others, to love, honor, and cherish till death do us part. And that's really the best capsule, at least for my marriage. That was what you would always go back to when you had rough times.
Yes, sir, for sure, for sure. And I want to add as well, like applying to this day and time, what I mean by the power couple, obviously following God's ordinance and playing by his rules first and foremost in our relationship, but in your community and in politics and everything, being active and not being like a power couple, also a couple that individually recognizes their strengths and how they can best work together and help their community with that. First, it has to start with their family and at home, and then their community, and a little bit by bit. But they actually have the ambition to, power couples have that ambition to do that and not pine away with it and slink off into the shadows with their knowledge and just see how they can save their own hide and have disregard for what happens to the next generation. That's something we're super passionate about, because it is easy to become blackpilled. There's so many people out there that have all these great skills and knowledge, but they kind of pine away with it. And it makes it a little bit harder and a little bit harder on the next person that sticks their neck out there. If we would all just try a little bit, then people wouldn't be targeted as hard and heavy. Y'all know all about that.
Well, you know, you have to focus on the family. I heard someone say that on their deathbed, they've never known anybody that regretted that they hadn't spent more time at the office.
Well, that's for sure. Well, I had the opportunity to meet Megan and her husband a couple of years ago at a speech that I gave in Alabama. And thankfully, over the course of the last couple of years, we've been able to grow more closely together, and they've really been a blessing to us, and we will continue on with our conversation with Megan Elise, young mother, here on Ladies Night, when we continue right after this.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Co-Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities, and it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start meaning it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Welcome back to Get on the Show. Call us on James's Dime at 866-986-6397.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, in order to make the cut for tonight's program, you had to be attractive, intelligent, wholesome, and right-thinking. Now, that is a high bar indeed, but all five of our ladies this evening have certainly cleared it and more. And we want to tell you how you can find out a little bit more about our guest right now, Megan Elise, the youngest of the five this evening. You can, if you're on Facebook, do a search query for the Dixie Bell blog, the Dixie Bell blog, if you're on Facebook, and there you'll be able to connect with Megan, and you'll be glad that you did. So we were talking with Kim earlier this evening, also Rebecca as well, the importance of taking responsibility for your children's education and the influence that comes into your home. Megan, your thoughts on that?
Yes, that's something I'm super passionate about. I actually was starting to go to college for early childhood education when I met my husband, and then decided I wanted to go the more traditional route and just completely give that up and support him in his career. There wasn't much they were teaching me about educating children anyways. I was figuring out, and I came from a homeschooled background, and I really just wanted it behind my name as a plus, so I couldn't be hassled with, oh, are you educated enough to be homeschooling your children, and that whole line people will try to tote. But I realized it was silly to try to have that. I couldn't afford it as just a plus, and I really enjoy supporting Marshall and pursuing his career. So it's something I'm really passionate about. I do love tutoring and educating children. They're not my own, and now I'm so excited to teach my own as well. But it comes down to a responsibility thing. I see all these Facebook groups locally, and I'm sure it's everywhere, where moms are constantly complaining about the schools and, oh, I wish they would do this better, and, oh, they're not doing this well enough, or sometimes they'll be praising them when they're like, finally, they've got this implemented, or finally, they're doing better on this, and I'm just thinking the whole time, it's not the school's responsibility. How can you be upset about these things? It's our responsibility. And the biggest excuse is people say they're not educated enough, or, oh, I can't imagine trying to organize all of that. And it's funny because with all the feminist movement, all these like the boss moms and this, that, and the other, they have the ambition to think that they could become an astronaut if they wanted to. They could be an open heart surgeon. But then you mention homeschooling and they're like, I could never do that. So it's like, really, you can do anything you put your mind to. You can go through all the schooling to learn how to do these really big things. And so you can put your mind to learning how to homeschool as well. And there's no excuse with all the technology that's out there now and all the support groups you can find virtually and most of the time locally as well. I just wanted to put a little word out for that and encouragement. And Kim made a good point earlier, too, that there's options. You just have to change your priorities a little bit. You're not at the end of your rope. You really, when you dig into it, there's so much you can do without. So your children are your biggest investment, and there's so much you can do without before giving them up to the brainwashing and indoctrination. It's really not that high level of education, even private schools, sadly. So I know we don't have a whole lot of time. I wanted to get to something else as well. But I know, Jane, y'all homeschool, and that's awesome. Your wife is amazing. And I cannot look forward to the journey more, doing this with my children and trying to help be that support to other women. That's something I want to write an article on very soon, is some step-by-steps and just resources I've learned over the years watching my parents do it from scratch, because they didn't come from homeschooling backgrounds. So you can do it. You can be the first one in your family to start doing it, and the Lord will bless you just by trying to do the right thing. I think he will take care of you. It'll work out.
Well, Megan, I certainly want to get to your conclusion this evening, but before we do that, let's just backtrack if we can. And everything you've said tonight is just very concise, very succinct. I appreciate the message you're bringing, especially, I mean, I'm not too terribly much older than you, but enough to have some perspective. I mean, from your age and your 20s, I mean, this is an incredible message. And but first, I would ask you, before you can scale the obstacles and the hurdles that come with marriage and with children, you must first find a suitable mate. So we have single men tonight in the audience. To be sure, how can anyone, single man or woman, go about in this day and age finding suitable partners for marriage? How do you go about it if you're single? What is the first step? I mean, they would perhaps enjoy having the problems that that married couples have, but first you have to be married. How do you do it?
Right. Very good point. Very good question, for sure. I would first and foremost say you have to make sure you're going about trying to find this mate the right way. And like we talked about in the very beginning with the biblical marriage roles, biblical gender roles, you have to be planned by God's roles for his blessings. And so I have written an article on my blog kind of the woman's personal struggle with it, and I want to write another one touching on more of the opposite angle. But because I do have friends that are not Christians or not really going about their dating life faith-based, and I see the struggle over and over, and I'm like, oh no, it's just such a repeat. It's so unfortunate. And frustrating for me because I want to see them happily settle down. So the biggest thing is going about it the right way. You have to be dating, or I should say, courting is really the proper word here. You have to be doing that the right way to find the right person, because if you're just going about the modern dating life and casual sex and all that, that's only going to get you so far. That was just not in dating, and that lifestyle was not really created to find somebody that wants to settle down and marry. So it really, that spreads you thin right there for sure. You're not, if you're finding somebody that's into doing that, how do you know that's going to be good? Well, we're talking from a man's perspective here. So how would you know that's going to be good wife material right there, long-term especially? So first off, make sure you're trying to go about it the right way and as biblically as possible, not being very loose about it. And then there, you can never go wrong with bettering yourself in the meantime, for sure. And this is something that I really like to go to my husband about. I feel like he did a really good job of focusing on himself and just trying to better himself and have as much to offer and impress me with himself while he was in search for me. And, that really, really helped, because I was not really in this mind frame that a lot of people think I'm, like, they think that a lot of male friends kind of in this ultra-conservative, more right-wing realm, I guess, are like, wow, how did you find Megan? Such a unicorn to find. And we kind of laughed because I wasn't really in this mind frame. I was impressed enough with how he conducted himself, and he painted such a good picture for all this. It was really a positive way of introducing me to it. And I was like, wow, why wouldn't I be for this? This really makes so much sense. This is so natural. So I would say going about courting the proper way and always be bettering yourself in the meanwhile. Don't think somebody's just going to come along with you stagnant. You have to be working on yourself for them and know that they're working on their self out there for you too. Have that encouragement. And surround yourself, lastly, I'd say surround yourself with other couples and families that embody the type of marriage you're seeking. Even if you do not find your wife in that crowd or their friends, those will be really good people for you to be close to and to introduce your prospective wife to when you do meet her, to kind of help show that example of the beautiful family picture you're looking for and longing for, and that will help paint the picture as well. If you're single and you don't know anybody like that to surround yourself with, and how are you going to really explain or prove to this wife of yours that might not be totally on board what is so wonderful about it, and why you would want to have that kind of family. So it really helps to seek those people out and have those people be who you hang around more. If you're hanging around a whole bunch of other single men that are just going about the modern dating life, that might not be the best group of people to find that traditional wife you're looking for, or just really good long-term wife in general.
Megan, this is Keith. I've got a very short answer to that question. you need to watch the movie Tammy and the Bachelor from 1957.
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming sometime tonight.
Tammy and the Bachelor, a 1957, it was a chick flick of the summer of 1957, starring Debbie Reynolds as this backwoodsy girl steeped in the Bible and full of wifely wisdom, and Leslie Nielsen is this high society guy that whose family has a mansion that's on the Natchez Pilgrimage. And it basically tells you what a young woman ought to be looking for in a husband candidate and what a young man ought to be looking for in a wife
candidate.
Now,
at the Keith Alexander Annual Film Festival, what's the first movie up?
When we have it for ladies, it's and really for men, too, Tammy and the Bachelor. That gets you at that ground level about what you ought to be looking for.
When does Amos and Andy air?
That goes on the dysfunctional side. No. No, that's great. But really, I would suggest that you try to find that movie. You can find it on YouTube. I'm sure it's on Netflix, too.
It's certainly at Keith's house.
Yeah, I've got it here. You can see it anytime.
Hey, Megan.
You and Marshall.
Megan, I want to thank you for coming on tonight. A little moment of levity there at the end. But ladies and gentlemen, if you want to connect with Megan Elise, do it on Facebook. Do a search for the Dixie Belle blog. The Dixie Belle blog. Great wisdom. She's young, but she's full of wisdom, and she's got a great family, and we appreciate her, and we love her.
Your life is proof of the soundness of her doctrine.